The centerpiece of Rupert's lectures on the truth and lies of 9/11 is the so-called Lucy timeline, named after Ricky Ricardo's signature comment on the old I Love Lucy TV show. Oh, Lucy, you got a lot of splainin' to do. The list of things that need splainin' has grown from 26 items to over 100. According to Rupert, the seeds of the 9/11 attacks were sown as early as 1991, when major oil companies began investing in Central Asia. The timeline continues to grow as events unfold that validate the assertion Rupert made shortly after the 9/11 attacks. The attacks were the trigger for a war for oil planned long before September 11, 2001. The Lucy timeline is now a list so long that Rupert can no longer deliver it in its entirety in his lectures. The complete timeline is available on his website, www.fromthewilderness.com. or www.copvcia.com, copvcia.com. Here are excerpts of the timeline that Rupert delivered on October 4, 2002, that bear on the subject of 9/11, oil, and war.
First of all, to summarize very briefly, in the 90s, the major oil companies poured billions of dollars in liquid cash, and they poured billions and billions of dollars, committed to hundreds of billions of cash investments. Again, that's cash, and in this economy especially, cash is king. Those of you who have credit cards will know that when you get your statement every month, you have a total balance owing, and then you have a minimum monthly payment due. How many people pay off your whole credit card balance every month? I wish I could do that. But you understand the difference. You can't pay your credit card bill with a bushel of wheat, nor with 40 hours of work, nor can you pay your mortgage or your rent. You have to have cash, and it works the same way for business. And the oil companies poured billions of dollars into Central Asia. They couldn't get the oil out. We also know that as early as 1995, the Philippine police had seized computers in the Philippines. From Ramzi Youssef that called for the hijacking of 10 aircraft and crashing them into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, a number of installations. We know now that the government knew categorically that aircraft could be used as weapons. We've seen all those revelations over the last couple of weeks, but thanks to the work that we all have done. We come down to point four. Did you know that, by the way, Unocal was so desperate to get the pipeline that in 1997 they invited representatives of the Taliban to their Texas headquarters for a barbecue? Come on down, let's have a barbecue. Yes, sir, bring on down. We'll use our sheep, not yours, you know, and our cows, and not yours. But they still couldn't work out a deal on the pipeline because the Taliban knew what they were doing. Now, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and Bin Laden were all creations of the CIA. And those relationships remained highly intact up to 2001, September the 9th, especially through the financing of Khalid bin Mahfouz, and Saudi financiers and major banking institutions, but also especially to the Pakistani ISI intelligence service that was pulling a great many strings. We come down to, down here, it's very important to note that Enron had this $3 billion investment in the power plant at Dabhol, India, and that's going to become very critical. By 1999, the government had changed positions. And the strategic goal had been no longer to negotiate with the Taliban on the one hand without a stick. And they started using the stick in 1999. First we had the embassy bombings, then we launched cruise missiles. But Clinton signed an executive order banning all business with the Taliban. But the negotiations for the pipeline still continued in the back door. This was from obviously from the White House website with their list of executive orders. This is very interesting. In the summer of 2001, The Washington Post and New York Daily News, obtained government emails showing, and it was reported in the Albion Monitor, that the National Security Council, now if you're familiar with the structure of government, the NSC is the White House. That's the White House body that oversees all of the military and all of the intelligence services. They convened a Dabhol working group for the benefit of Enron. This is not an economic policy relief issue about Enron not being able to get natural gas. This is the National Security Council trying to figure out how to bail Enron out of this $3 billion investment in India because they can't get natural gas. That is also what we call a clue. Members of the G8 meeting, the G8 meeting in Genoa, Italy, was one of the most pivotal events before the attacks of 9/11 that occurred in July. They discussed the Taliban at the G8 meeting, the eight largest industrialized nations in the world. They discussed the handing over of bin Laden, and according to Pakistani representative Ambassador Naiz Naik, the U.S. delegation led by former Clinton Ambassador Tom Simmons warned of a military option if the Taliban did not change positions. This is from another good book about 9/11 called Bin Laden, The Forbidden Truth by Jean-Charles Brisseau and Guillaume Destier that has unfortunately been published in the States by The Nation Books, and some of the harder text has been changed in the translation by The Nation Books as opposed to what was in the French version. But immediately after the G8 summit, three American officials, Tom Simmons, Carl Underfirth, and Lee Coldren, have a meeting called the 6+2 meeting that's extremely well documented now with Pakistani, Russian intelligence, other intelligence agencies in Berlin. The Taliban is there, they come in and out of some of the meetings. But the ISI is the basic telephone line to the Al-Qaeda. And they say, look, guys, we're gonna planning military strikes. You either give us bin Laden, organize the country so we can build the pipelines and we'll bury you under a carpet of gold, otherwise we're gonna bury you under a carpet of bombs in October. So well known was this plan, actually, that Indian papers and other papers in the region, and we have them in the timeline, were saying that military action against the Taliban was coming in October, and that was long before the attacks of September the 11th. Late August, Prince Turki Al-Faisal, who was the head of the Saudi intelligence service, was fired. And he was, for 25 years, one of bin Laden's best friends. The Saudi Arabian connections to the attacks of 9/11 are legendary, extremely well documented, and very significant. What is amazing, though, is that for almost a year after 9/11, we heard nothing about the Saudi connections, and then they became an issue about 2 months ago. And I'm going to tell you why in just a few minutes. But he was fired because he was too close to bin Laden, and the attacks were coming. Now, just before September the 11th, isn't it strange that on September the 10th, in an exercise known as Operation Swift Sword, the British had 23,000 combat troops on their way to Oman, which is right next, it's 100 miles from Pakistan across the Gulf there. They had the largest armada since the Falkland Islands War, gearing up out of London to leave to sail to Oman. The U.S. conveniently had two aircraft carrier battle groups in an abnormal rotation parked right off the Pakistani coast. And we also had 17,000 U.S. troops along with 23,000 NATO troops in Egypt for Operation Bright Star. Other information revealed that I started with and Nafis built on and Paul Thompson has built on shows that we've been training special troops in all the northern all the countries that border Afghanistan to the north, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and we had troops deployed there all before September the 11th. Isn't that a clue? Yes, that's a clue. We've been planning, actually, for more than 4 years. Operation Swift Sword was 4 years in the planning, according to the British government's information that I say. The Pakistani newspaper, The Frontier Post, says, golly gee, Ambassador Wendy Chamberlain, in light of recent geopolitical developments, just had a meeting with the Pakistani oil and gas minister. And all these pipelines that nobody could get built for all this time, guess what? They're all back on track in view of these new changes in world, these new geopolitical changes. The pipelines are, the World Bank just opened an office in Afghanistan, for God's sake, to finance the pipelines. Treaties have been signed, contracts have been signed. We have a story on our website called Pipelinistan that's very well researched. You want to see what the progress of the pipelines is. It's just amazing. How many people have seen Casablanca, the movie? One of my favorite lines. I'm shocked. There's gambling going on in this establishment. Afghanistan is once again, we're having no opium. A year ago, the world's largest producer of the opium poppy, and exactly as I predicted, just weeks after the attacks, that one of the first things that we would see as a result of this war would be a worldwide epidemic of heroin, which is now sweeping across Russia and Western Europe. And guess where the money's going to come? It's going to be controlled by the same guys that have arranged this war, Britain and the United States and the major banks and the oil companies. And there's a tie-in between the drug money and the oil companies. You got to build all these pipelines. Where do you get the cash? You got to sustain the economies and boost your stock prices. Where do you get the cash? One of the quickest ways to end this, and I'll never make anybody else see it or take action on it, if you want to end this madness, decriminalize drugs. I'm serious. It makes sense to you here and to me, but you'll never go out and argue that to the American people. They just won't get it. They just won't get it. Hamid Karzai is a former Unocal employee. Are we surprised? The U.S. proconsul in Afghanistan, Zalmay Khalilzad, is a former Unocal consultant who consulted on the pipelines. He is the puppet master who just made sure that Prime Minister Karzai kept his job when democracy threatened to raise its ugly head. Now, to talk about how insane the planet is, I heard a thing on CNN 2 days ago. The Nobel Committee is considering Hamid Karzai, George W. Bush, and Tony Blair for the Nobel Peace Prize. Beam me up, Scotty, if there's no intelligent life here.
Several days after Rupert gave this lecture, the Norwegian Nobel Committee awarded the Peace Prize to former President Jimmy Carter. In what many view as a message to the White House, the committee said in its award citation, quote, "In a situation currently marked by threats of the use of power, Carter has stood by the principles that conflicts must be, as far as possible, resolved through mediation and international cooperation based on international law, respect for human rights, and economic development," unquote.